This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Addiction, prevention, recovery.
Welcome to the Recovery Rebirth Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Recovery Rebirth Podcast. I'm Dominic.
And I'm Jillian.
Today we're going to cover a rather serious topic, a topic that certainly affects people who are addicted to substances or people or money, or a lot of things that you know can cause people to feel suicidal, to contemplate suicide. It's a very serious topic. Suicide is defined as the intentional act of taking one's own life, and it's pretty much tied directly to hopelessness.
Yeah.
You know, if you've lost all hope and there's no light at the end of the tunnel, if there's nothing to look forward to anymore, people can become suicidal.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. Problems come and go throughout life. Everybody has 89 problems. Which ones do you want today?
Right.
You know,
right.
That kind of thing. But we know that the pandemic that you know, we're just coming out of the pandemic phase. There was a very high rate of overdoses.
Yeah.
Yep. The suicide rate, you had done some research, didn't change much, Jillian?
Yeah, that surprised me. So in preparation for our recording, I did a little cursory research because, and this is a perception thing, right? And an assumption thing on my part. I assumed that the rate of suicide might have increased during COVID because of the hopelessness and despair and, you know, anxiety people were feeling, but it turns out it actually didn't. It decreased a little bit.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Yep.
Actually, the statistics show that the people most likely to commit suicide are middle-aged men. Middle-aged men, and also older men. Men over 65 were most likely to die of suicide.
Yeah, I also found that, so there's, and I'll put all of this in the show notes because this is an episode that, of course, we want to be resource rich because it's such an important and heavy topic and we want to provide resources. But the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, so SAMHSA, I found on their website, it goes over some statistics, and rates of suicide in the U.S. are almost four times higher for men than women. I guess that surprised me a little bit.
Yeah, you would think that, I don't know, it would be more balanced, but it isn't. It really skews toward middle-aged white men.
Yeah, yep.
And by the way, before we get too deep into the episode, I want to put out the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline number. Of course, we'll have it in our show notes, but I thought I'd put this out there right away in case anybody's feeling despair that could lead toward suicidal thoughts. You can call 800-273-8255. That's 800-273-8255.
Yes.
The national helpline. And for those of you who are in the United States, I believe this is everywhere in our country, they've set up a 211 crisis hotline.
Yep.
So you can call 211 and they'll connect you with a crisis counselor depending on what you're going through and so forth.
Yep.
Because if you're feeling that hopeless, it really is a cry for help before the actual act is committed. And please, listeners, if you know somebody or you're in this situation, please cry out for help before you do a permanent solution to a temporary problem.
Thank you for sharing those, because I was going to. So Griffin Place is the local organization. When in the Kalamazoo area where we're at, when you dial 211, you'll be connected. So that's the local agency.
And I believe they have national operators as well that take calls all over the country for that 211 exchange in different places. So, Jillian, you've got kind of a personal attachment to this topic from some personal experience. I know it's a sensitive topic, but would you be willing to share some of your experience with the suicide topic?
Absolutely, yeah. And this, when we first started brainstorming about this podcast, how long ago now has it been?
A little bit.
Pre-pandemic. Suicide was one of the first, you know, it was one of the topics we came up with because of the link between addiction and suicide. But, you know, more recently for me, I did have a few experiences, not directly, but people close to me. And I also want to put out like a little trigger warning, of course. I mean, given the topic, some of this could be triggering for listeners. So just want to put that out there, because it's not a topic you can sugarcoat. So I did have three women very close to me earlier this year, between January and March, I think it was. So three of my close friends who lost ex-boyfriends, I mean, people they weren't currently in a relationship with, but lost their exes to suicide. And at least two of those men had a long-standing, like couple decades long battle with addiction, mental illness. Those we know, you know, go hand in hand sometimes too. There's the comorbidity. The third person, he had definitely been in a downward spiral for a while. And my friend, you know, when it happens, it's just very surreal, but she saw all the signs, like withdrawing from, you know, quitting his job, like a lot of different things. That one was, of the three, I mean, they were all terrible, but that one was the worst, because he actually did it in front of his estranged wife.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And so, and I don't know, that one was with a gun. We talked a little bit before we started recording about the methods used, especially among men.
Yeah, do you know over half are gun-related suicides?
Yep. I know at least in one of those three suicides, it was like strangulation or he hung himself. I don't know how the first one happened. But again, it just really like really hit me when I'm like, three women very close to me in my inner circle have all lost somebody who, like, and two of them had children with these. All three men were fathers, but the last friend, she was no longer in a relationship with this man and didn't have children with him, but the first two friends, they had been co-parenting with these two guys and then had to, you know, try to console their children who lost their fathers in a very terrible way. But yeah, I noticed right away that I'm like, okay, at least two of these three men have long-standing histories with struggling with addiction and mental illness, you know, mental health issues. So
just out of curiosity, did they mention that they had started using again prior to suicide?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that I think at least with the two that who had known issues, I don't know how much sobriety they had. I think they were probably in that cycle that so many people can fall into of, like, you know, just relapsing, like getting a little stretch of sobriety and then relapsing. And I don't think they had any long-standing sobriety.
It'd be interesting to hear the stats on that. You know, suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. Wow. That's pretty scary. It's in the top 10.
Yes.
For cause of death in the U.S., according to the CDC.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned some of the warning signs, losing interest in, you know, your work or school or whatever, withdrawing from friends, with
isolation
and withdrawal, this feeling of hopelessness.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people start giving away their possessions as if they're meaningless, you know, here, take everything.
Yep.
Those are some of the danger signals, warning signs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing I would say is check on your friends. If they're normally social and then all of a sudden they're antisocial.
Yeah.
it doesn't hurt to reach out. Actually pick up the telephone and make a call. Are you okay?
Yeah.
To reach out to people. And when you do see the warning signs with people, maybe encourage them to get help. Because really, I don't know if there's stats on this, but suicide or talking about suicide is a cry for help.
Yes. Yes.
Because if somebody really just wanted to commit suicide, they would do it and they wouldn't say anything about it. They wouldn't even leave a note.
Right.
Why leave a note? You know, it's like after the fact crying out for help.
Yes. So when people are actually talking about it, yes, it's often like there's still a chance to intervene and to say, hey, I'm concerned. I've noticed you've been withdrawing lately. Is everything okay? Do you want to go for a walk? Do you want to get out of the house? Because from what I know and what I've heard, that people who are really serious about it, they just do it. They don't tell anybody.
Correct. And ironically, in AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, if you go to open speaker talks, which are open to the public, anybody can go and listen at an open talk. I've heard people talk about a botched suicide attempt, and there's actually laughter in the room at that point. That's when you really know somebody's gotten some solid recovery, that you could joke about a botched suicide attempt.
Mm-hmm.
I remember hearing a story about one guy said he laid down on the train tracks, and he was hoping for this fast-moving train to just take him out. And a freight train was coming so slowly that he had time to think through it and decided to get off the track.
Was it like that scene in Austin Powers with the steamroller? That's what comes to mind. Yeah. And the guy's just, but he just stays there. I digress.
I mean, it's such a serious topic, but when you hear people being able to laugh about it years later, that's recovery.
It is.
But when you're in the middle of it, I've been suicidal twice in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Once drunk and once sober.
Yeah.
And I think the one that scared me more was sober.
Of course.
It lasted for about 10 seconds or less when I was sober. But it just, the thought crossed my mind out of the blue that it would be a better world without me in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it scared the daylights out of me.
Yeah.
And I really started digging back into my program of recovery and trying to help others and supposedly doing all the right things.
Right.
And I don't want to die today. I want to live.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to live a long time and be healthy. But that takes some effort and some growth. But being drunk and feeling totally hopeless, that lasted a while, and it was leading up to what was going to be a gun suicide for me. I had already pictured it in my head and gone through it.
Yeah.
And then out of the blue, it struck me that this is a permanent solution to a temporary problem.
Yeah.
And somehow I had a shred of hope.
Mm-hmm.
Just a shred of hope came to light, and you know, you don't want to do that.
Right.
And as if the voice in my head said, you don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Everybody has problems. We can overcome our problems if we stay sober and if we are working a program and we have good people in our life to ask for advice and help. This business of isolation and trying to deal with it, I got this, is the worst words out of an addict's mouth.
Yeah, trying to go it alone is usually the path for relapse or worse. And we have different kinds of relapse, because my problem has never been alcohol or a substance. It's been an alcoholic or a dysfunctional man. And I too, like from even back when I was a teenager, I would have like suicidal thoughts, but mine was mostly, you know, because of my poor sense of self-worth and low self-esteem, and then getting wrapped up in these relationships that would reinforce my low self-esteem because I would feel abandoned over and over and over. And I would get to those, I mean, I'm not proud to admit it, you know, especially even after having kids, to feel that hopeless. I'm like, what the heck? I don't feel that way anymore. But there have been times that I have felt that way, like, oh, you know, my kids would be better off without me. And just, yeah, I don't know. That's a lot to unravel. But my brother, when he was still alive, he did attempt suicide in 2012.
Oh, gosh.
And he had years, like, he was diagnosed with bipolar disorder at around 17, I think. And so he battled some serious, serious depression for decades. And for years, I thought, you know, that it was just like, you know, because sometimes it can be just a cry for help or try to get attention. I didn't think he would ever actually do it or attempt it. But he did. And he, you know, he carved his arm up pretty well and took a bunch of, like, I think it was Tylenol. I don't know. He was unsuccessful. But it was one of the worst nights of my life. I got a call from my mom telling me that she didn't have many details, but that my brother, you know, was in the hospital. My dad came over. I had to drive my dad to the hospital because he was a wreck. And when I called the hospital, they, because of HIPAA, and I understand that, you know, they need to protect people's privacy, they couldn't give me too many details. And I remember asking the lady, you know, if he was there. And she's like, I can't tell you. And I'm like, I don't know if my brother is alive. The police told my mom, you know, that he was at the hospital. And she might have been putting herself at risk for even saying this. And she said, he's here, but he can't talk. So she confirmed he was there. And I'm like, well, what does that mean? He can't talk because he's dead? Or, you know, I just, that unknown. And it was just, it was one of the darkest nights of my life. And hearing my dad's, that it was one of the worst sounds I've ever heard, is hearing my dad sobbing. Because what we do is we blame ourselves. Like, that's just a common thread with anybody who experiences. I haven't personally lost somebody. I almost lost my brother to suicide. But that just seems to be the default for the loved ones is, you know, what did I do wrong? Like, it's my fault. I could have done something different. And I know my dad was grappling with that. And so we got to the hospital. My brother was still alive. But, you know, he had all these scars for years after where he tried to kill himself. You know, evidence that he tried to kill himself. But, yeah, I wouldn't wish that on anyone. That was just, it was horrific. It was just, and just to, you know, to try to, I do have a sense because I have felt that way, although I've never gone to the point where I like have kind of mapped it out where like, this is how I would do it. But when somebody's feeling that low and that hopeless, to think that that's the only solution is to opt out of life.
I hate to say this, and I apologize in advance if I offend anyone, but it has got to be the most self-centered, narcissistic thing in the world to commit suicide, playing God and saying, I'm better off dead, I'll fix this. That is really self-centered and selfish. And that means you're stuck in your own head. When I'm feeling self-centered and selfish, I'm stuck in my own head, and it's time for me to talk to other people. Yeah. And that's why we beg of you to please reach out for help. I don't mean that to sound offensive, but right. It's like you're putting a period at the end of a sentence that isn't complete.
It should be a semicolon.
It shouldn't be.
Well, and
isn't the semicolon a suicide
yes,
survivor kind of thing?
It actually is. I didn't think, it just came out of my mouth. And I'm like, oh, right. I mean, that's a tattoo that people get.
That's a tattoo that people get when I don't know if they've survived suicide or had suicide in the family or friend right. or something like
it could
that.
Could be either or. And, you know, I've often heard what you just said, that that's a terribly selfish thing to do. I don't know how I feel about it. I don't know. I mean, yes, and I understand that feeling of like the world would be better off without. I mean, I've had those thoughts and it sucks. I mean, it's a terrible place to be, but I don't know. But I would encourage anybody who's feeling like that's the only way out to please reconsider, because whether or not you believe it, there are people who love you and will miss you, and it will impact their lives. They will be there will be just an a wound that I don't know how you ever heal that. I mean, there's just going to be this emptiness in them, and that's not to guilt trip, but I think sometimes people, when they get to that point, they truly believe like no one would miss me anyhow. That's not true.
That is so correct. It is not true. People will miss you. People will be confused and not be able to understand why you couldn't see hope in the future. Mm-hmm. You know, that's, once again, I repeat that you should get help and talk to other folks, because maybe somebody could help you find the permanent problem, and you could come up with a temporary solution instead of a permanent one to fix what's wrong. I know from being hopeless myself, mm-hmm. being in that position, feeling totally hopeless, that it does turn around.
Mm-hmm.
And as a person in long-term recovery, I've experienced times of despair.
Mm-hmm.
And those times have turned back around.
Yeah.
So I know things change if you give it time.
Yeah. And it's, I know if you could just hang on just a little bit longer. And there's music, songs that are coming to me right now. There's one by Peter Gabriel. It's Peter Gabriel and Kate Bush, actually. And that always gets me choked up. It's called Don't Give Up.
Mm.
I think it's like, yeah. Oh my gosh, I might just have to put a link to the YouTube video in the show notes. And there's another one. My son introduced me to a musician, a rapper named Logic, a handful of years ago. And he actually has a song, and the title of the song has that suicide prevention number in it, that you, the 1-800-273-8255 is actually in the title of that song.
Mm.
And that one always makes me cry too. But, you know, it's for those of us left behind who lose someone to suicide, they're just, it feels like there's just questions and no answers. And it's a special, complicated kind of grief. Like, there's many different kinds of grief, and we've done some podcasts on grief.
Mm-hmm.
That is one of the most complicated, because it's, if somebody dies of cancer, if somebody dies in a car accident, if somebody dies of a heart attack, you know, there are so many, there's still grief. But with this, it's like, you know, I feel like you will be left with this lifelong wondering, like, what could I have done differently? How could I have stopped this? Just that crushing guilt. I don't know how. I mean, with time, of course, that can be lessened. But again, you know, listeners, if this resonates for you, if you've felt that hopeless and that's the only way out, or that's the only option, please reconsider. Please check some of the resources we'll share. Please check in with somebody, because, again, you will be missed. There's more for you to do on this earth. And I really believe that everybody listening to this, we all have a sense of purpose. And but we have to be here to realize that sense of purpose.
That's a great statement. You do have a purpose. Your life is not a throwaway. You're here for some sort of reason, even if it doesn't make sense at the time.
Mm-hmm.
There are some questions that can be asked if you think a person is suicidal and you want to try to get some feeling for where they're at, like asking them how they're coping with their challenges or problems. How are you coping with it?
Mm-hmm.
And if they have no answers, you know that they might be hopeless. They have no coping mechanisms in place for their challenges. Or being more direct and saying, are you thinking about hurting yourself?
Wow.
Are you thinking about suicide? Asking the tough question. Mm-hmm. I've been in situations where people are pretty messed up and desperate. I mean, I'm also a certified recovery coach and have taken calls from people who have been in pretty rough shape mentally and physically. And I've asked them flat out, you know, do you want to die? You know, are you thinking about doing it yourself, or are you just, you know, do you want to die the slow, painful death of continuing to drink?
Right.
You know, that's a form of suicide also, you know, if you're going to continue to drink. And then maybe saying something like, do you have a plan?
Right.
Have you made a plan for this? You know, it can be a simple question like that. And if somebody says, yep, I've made a plan, I'm going to do this, that, and the other thing, then you know you're in a dangerous zone.
Right.
You've gone from yellow caution to red. This is an emergency.
Yes.
And a crisis situation. I've even gone so far as to say, you know, I'm thinking about doing a wellness check on somebody.
Yeah.
I haven't heard from them. They're not answering their phone. Mm-hmm. I'm going to show up at their house and knock on the door. And I know they're inside. They better answer.
Right.
At one point, I was going to bring a police officer with me, and we were ready to kick the door in if necessary. you know, been through this with folks, and
yeah,
where they've been in pretty rough shape. It's not fun.
I mean, it happens so much in, you know, in recovery, unfortunately, like we mentioned earlier. And I was looking at some of those statistics from the SAMHSA site again. So like, you know, four times as men are four times as likely. But if you look at addiction and suicide, the connections there. And again, these are 2016 statistics. I think, let me just double check, and I will include a link, but it's 22% of deaths by suicide in the U.S. involve alcohol intoxication.
Mm.
And then 20%, so opiates, including heroin and prescription painkillers, are present in 20% of suicide deaths in the U.S.
Well, in 2020... more men died to suicide by close to four times more than women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And on the average, there are 130 suicides per day.
Not surprising.
That seems quite high. It's scary.
Yeah.
How many people are that hopeless? Mm-hmm. And once again, you know, a permanent solution to a temporary problem.
Right.
We all have problems. And I think a lot of, I'm just going to take a stretch here.
Uh-huh.
I think a lot of the older white men, according to the stats, that are committing suicide, I mean, a lot of it has to do with depression.
Yes.
That's been proven. That's a stat that you can look up, the
yeah,
research, that yeah, depression is a big one. But also, I think financial worries.
Yeah.
You know, as much as we'd like to think society has evolved, men are still looked at in a lot of ways as breadwinners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if we have more women breadwinners these days, which we do.
Yeah.
Men are still looked at as a breadwinner. And it can be pretty hopeless if mm-hmm, you feel this financial pain coming on. And you're supposed to be, you've been taught since you
right,
were a baby, that you are the man, you're the breadwinner.
You're the provider, and you feel that pressure.
And you feel that constant pressure
yeah,
to do that, that it might be easier to, you know, to end your life than to try to continue it if
right,
you feel hopeless and there's no solution.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I can get stressed out about money. I can be in a fear situation where I'm, you know, fight or flight mode, you know,
yeah,
adrenaline pumping fear of money situations and problems. I've been there.
Mm-hmm.
I've been broke down to my last 10 bucks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know what it feels like. But I always thought as long as I have my health,
right,
I can turn that back around. You know, it stinks. It just, you know, flat out stinks to have to be broke.
Yeah.
But as long as you're alive and healthy,
mm-hmm,
and for me, as long as I'm alive, healthy, and sober,
yeah,
I can hopefully dig out of that's a temporary situation.
Yes.
But finances kill people.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and right now there's just so much of that because there's a lot of uncertainty, you know, and there's a lot of, I think a lot about, and this ties back to a previous podcast that was, it's already been released on homelessness and people experiencing homelessness. I worry so much right now about folks who are on the bubble, who, you know, were barely getting by, living to check to check already before the current, you know, state of the economy and with, you know, gas prices and food costs rising. So I worry about food security for folks. I worry about housing for folks. I mean, that's a huge amount of stress.
On you or on the people that are worried?
Yeah, on all of us, you know. I mean, yeah, I mean, I'm feeling it. Some, I'm fortunately in a position where, you know, I got a new position, which came with a raise at work, so I don't feel that stress as much. But I know there are a lot of people. I was, for years, we talked about this, in that working poor category. So that's, I mean, if you don't know if you're going to be able to provide housing for yourself or your family or, you know, put food on the table. I mean, there's just, yeah, that financial economic stress is so pronounced right now.
It's a painful situation, and it's really hard to go backwards once you've gone forwards. You know,
mm-hmm,
it's It's like you're playing the Monopoly game and it says, do not pass go, do not collect your $200.
Right.
And yeah. and that adds up after a while.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want to go through it again. I hope I never have to go through it again. But I have to remember for myself, if I start feeling hopeless,
yeah.
that as long as I have my health mm-hmm. and my sobriety,
yep.
I can continue to make changes that'll end up in the positive.
And I will say that, you know, now that I've come through the other side and, you know, for me, the this too shall pass, I had to remember that when I was in the really, when I was at my rock bottom or, you know, when I was in those dark times, I'm so grateful that I'm still here and that because it was survivable, even if it didn't feel like it was at the time, even if I couldn't envision life ever getting any better. Life is so much better than I ever thought it could be. When I was in my at my lowest point, so yeah.
So I'm definitely grateful that I'm still here and that I didn't take that extra step. I mm-hmm. was killing myself slowly with alcohol,
right?
And I was going to die anyway. And then I was thinking about accelerating the process,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
Obviously chickened out of that, you know, or maybe it was an intervention from a power greater than myself, but
yeah.
That thought went away, and I didn't follow through with it, and I'm really grateful that I didn't. And I'm grateful that I'm not suicidal today. I want to be healthy. I want to be vibrant.
Mm-hmm.
I want to live a long time and be a contributor wherever I can be. You know, I'm going to close out my thoughts on this with a note from a book I read on happiness, trying to find happiness. What is happiness? And and true happiness comes from giving.
Mm.
And if you feel like you can't give or contribute, you're not going to be as happy, no matter how much you have.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have all the possessions in the world and not be happy if you're not contributing and giving to someone else's life. And that true happiness comes from that gift of giving.
Mm.
So if you want to find happiness, look for ways where maybe you can help somebody else, and maybe that'll help you with the depression. It'll help you with the feeling of a lack of self-worth. Your worth will come back to you. Give something somewhere to other people. Volunteer, you know, at a nonprofit mm-hmm. or a food bank or somewhere, volunteer for one of the organizations that help the homeless.
Yeah.
You know, I found over the years in recovery that if I'm feeling depressed or sad about something, not to diminish my own sadness or mm-hmm. my own depression, but I go listen to other people's stories and I realize I haven't got it that bad.
Right. Perspective. So, yep.
You have some closing thoughts, Jillian?
Yeah, for me, I would just say that, again, if there's anyone listening to this right now who's at a rock bottom or feeling incredibly low and feeling hopeless, I would encourage you, please don't give up and just hang on just for today, as they say in recovery, right? Just for today. And we will share resources in the show notes, but please reach out rather than reaching for something to end that permanent solution to a temporary problem, reach for a phone instead, please.
Mm-hmm. That number, once again, is the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. It's 800-273-8255. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks, listeners.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.